Doesn't need to complain, said Chiasa. They asked me to work there, but not a chance. Here, I get enough whining already about who or who killed me, or boo-hoo, I got one shot, it's so not fair.
Seki chuckled, and Chiasa continued.
Everything else can be looted, and most likely will. Rule of thumb is, if it can be traded, it can be looted.
She then waved her hand.
All right, that was 5 minutes, so shoo, off you go.
Seki got up and noticed that the room he had woken in had a raised floor, and at the end of it he found his shoes neatly arranged. As he sat down to put them on, he heard busy footsteps running down the corridor.
The morgue is a busy place, said Chiasa, picking up his empty cup from the floor. They tend to come in waves.
Seki turned around to thank her as he left. Hopefully you won't have to see me again too soon, he added. Chiasa responded with an amused, ha, and waved him off. Outside of the room was a narrow wooden corridor where people were emerging from similar doors that lined its whole length. Sachiko, level 5, was looking around with interest as people rushed past her. Mamoru of the Kensoku Guards, level 18, in a long white robe, was muttering something about samurais as he ran down the corridor. Seki followed the flow of people. Yuka of the Honor Warriors, level 13, with a short ponytail and in Shinshioka armor, fell in beside him.
Hey, were you from that brawl in Monjin? That was crazy.
No, more like a level 18 ninja.
Passing kill?
She tried to guess.
That tends to stop happening to you once you're level 16. To one-shot you, they will need to be in the 20s, and people tend to stop being idiots at that point.
Seki was quite certain that the people who were after him were not simply being idiots, but there was no reason to explain. They reached the end of the corridor, at which point most people turned right, apart from one level 23 woman in a bright silver and blue kimono who took a left.
Upper court,
said Yuka when she saw Seki looking.
Gotta work for that privilege.
The Bureau of the Dead was located in a wide hall adjacent to the morgue, with several officers working behind the counter to return unlooted goods to people. Yuka walked confidently toward a counter, and Seki followed her to the next one.
Name? One of the officers asked Seki without looking up from his pile of papers.
Seki told him his name, after which the officer yelled at one of the young apprentices in a simple black uniform to retrieve box 43789.
Do you wish to know who or what was responsible for your death? Asked the officer, again without looking up.
Seki did not expect the question.
Oh, I think I already know.
This is just to keep people accountable,
explained Yuka from the next counter as she put her name on a piece of paper.
You can't snipe people and keep it a secret.
Do you wish to receive a combat log? Asked the officer.
I wouldn't really call it a combat.
Seki had no doubt it would be very short.
Do you wish to receive a combat log? Asked the officer again, sounding annoyed. If you do not wish to receive a combat log now, it can later be found in the Bureau of Records, which may incur a cost.
No thank you, said Seki.
The officer continued to look through his papers for a moment before the apprentice came back with the box.
Sign the receipt,
said the officer, as he tossed down Hikari, the spirit dagger, a paper crane charm, and a few silver and copper coins onto the counter and thrust a piece of paper in front of Seki.
Brush is in the ink pot.
The ink pot turned out to be glued to the counter, and the greasy brush hardly had any hair left in it. Seki signed his name as legibly as he could, before turning his attention to his belongings. He was surprised to discover that nothing was missing.
If you're done, then hurry off, said the officer, waving his hand. We haven't got all day. Too many people die every minute.
Beside him, Yuka was chuckling to herself as she re-equipped her two swords of different lengths and scooped a pile of rocks back into her waist pouch.
Apparently no one wants iron ore.
She dropped several copper coins into her pouch as well.
Or spare change.
She turned to smile at Seki before running off without another word. Yuka's officer could be heard calling after her.
Have a good night, Yuka-san, and be careful.
Following the flow of people, Seki soon found his way out of the Bureau of the Dead, which turned out to be located in a large one-storied official building with a gray roof and an expansive stone garden in West City. Glancing around, he determined that it was in fact almost in the middle of the city. The distinctive curved roofs of Mani Shrine could be spotted in the distance. There were a few people hanging around in the stone garden. Further away, the gate was guarded heavily by city patrols in groups of 3 and 4, keeping a close watch on the people as they exited the place. Seki noticed something wrong. Right ahead, beside the city patrols, he was certain someone in camouflage was waiting. Seki slowed down and kept his eyes on the spot, and after a few seconds, the air shimmered and Taka of the Shadow Manor, level 19, materialized. Seki stopped walking. Taka's silver glaive was strapped across his back and showed no sign of initiating an attack.
Nothing was looted, said the ninja solemnly. We're assassins, not robbers. This is not over, so always look behind you when you're walking alone in the dark. This will serve as a reminder that you never should have offended the Shadow Manor.
Never should have offended the Shadow Manor.
Another voice had joined in, full of amusement, and finished almost at the same time as the ninja. Both of them turned to look in surprise. A girl in a bright yellow kimono, Kiku of the White Crane Order, level 21, was sitting on top of the wall, swinging her legs back and forth. Kiku giggled.
Did Nietzsche write that script? I tell you, Ninja-san, that seriously needs some work.
No shadow, Seiki quickly noted as he studied the girl. Taka glared at her but said nothing. He whistled, and a black horse, the same one Seiki's blade had cut earlier, galloped in. Taka jumped on his mount.
Stay out of this, he shouted to the girl as he rode off.
Kiku turned her attention to Seiki.
You're the guy from the Ichikeya challenge, aren't you? Come now, don't look so surprised. A lot of people saw the thing.
There had indeed been a large crowd, Seiki remembered. The girl leapt off the wall and seemed to fall at a slightly slower speed than Seiki expected and landed gently without a sound. Her wide yellow sleeves that almost reached the ground settled down lightly around her.
Come with me, Seiki. There are people who would like to see you.
This meeting, Seiki assumed, was not by chance. She had been waiting for him just like Taka had. Seeing him hesitate, Kiku giggled again.
Not everyone wants you dead. It's just around the corner. Here.
Kiku invites you to a group.
And you can check all my abilities. No backstab modification,
said Kiku, raising both her hands. Seiki remarked that he had never seen an Obake carry a weapon.
Now you're perfectly safe from me.
She looked so young and innocent in her bright yellow kimono that Seiki felt ashamed that he had doubted her.
Sorry, I didn't mean to...
The Obake waved it off.
Hey, don't worry. You'll need an invite later anyway, so just accept.
You are now in a group with Kiku, level 21, and Ikumi, level 20. Surprised, Seiki peered around for Ikumi, but there was no one else there, except for the steady trickle of slightly unhappy people who had just come out of the Bureau of the Dead. Kiku did not notice his puzzlement and had already started skipping down the street.
I would be suspicious too if I just realized I was on the Shadow Manor's hit list.
Seiki caught up with her.
Yeah, about that, he began. I don't understand...
Why Taka waited around just to recite you that script?
Kiku winked as she guessed what he was about to say.
It's the Shadow Manor. They're assassins, not robbers. They always make that very clear since they've got a reputation to maintain.
Okay.
Assassins for hire,
she added when Seiki did not seem to understand what she meant. Seiki knew there was some nuance here he was missing. Noticing his silence, the Obake decided to spell it out.
If you want someone dead and you're not good enough to kill them... You pay the Shadow Manor to do it. If you don't want your target to know you're behind the death, you pay the Shadow Manor to do it.
Right, said Seiki, remembering something. Because the bureau officer tells you who killed you.
Still, the impermanence of death seemed to undermine the whole concept of assassinations, and Seiki could not imagine why anyone would need to go to such lengths, as he was quite certain that assassinations did not come cheap. Kiku gave him an understanding smile.
There's one major thing that you might not have thought about, which is the main reason why the Shadow Manor is in business.
She took a deep breath as if she was about to reveal a secret.
You see, there's a kill log, which you can access from the Bureau of Records. There's also a loot log, also accessible from the same place.
She paused to make sure the next bit registered.
Yes, there's a full record of everything that has ever been looted from anyone or anything, complete with a date, time, and name of person who looted it, sortable by item name or person name or date. Most people don't bother because it's too much of a hassle.
Seiki could not believe he had never heard of this before.
You should go see it sometimes. Their archive hall is gigantic. That's how the society keeps track of where the uniques are, among other things that they do. The kicker is that it's all in scrolls and pieces of paper. You see, that's the whole joke on us. No technology. Very funny,
she said, veering off into a little annoyed rant before catching herself.
Anyways, let's say you have a precious piece of unused gear that you want to sell. Or even an unclaimed named weapon and someone wants to take it from you. The Shadow Manor kills you, someone loots your gear, and you go check all the records to see who was responsible, and they turn out to be called Takoyaki Level 4.
The Obake giggled when she saw Seiki's confused expression.
That actually happened to someone I know. You see, that's how you get away with a perfect robbery. There's a loot log, but no public trade log.
It started to make sense to Seiki now.
I see, he said slowly.
So you get a low level to loot the gear and give it to you.
Not just any low level,
said Kiku.
These are professional doubles. They do this for a living. Rumor is they get banned, but that's not a big deal since it's a throwaway character anyways.
Seiki thought about it and recognized another reason why it had to be a level 4 was because PvP was still conveniently disabled at that point. There was something else he did not understand. But why doesn't the Shadow Manor just do it themselves?
That's their code. They're strictly assassins and they never loot their victims. That way they avoid a lot of clan wars and territory challenges because people know they don't have the items. And hence the script. Does that answer your question?
Yes, said Seiki, marveling at his first real glimpse of the complexity of economy and society these people had managed to make for themselves.
Well, all that said, actually, most of the Shadow Manor's income is from petty people who hire them to kill their enemies over and over, just to annoy them and make them waste their money on fixing their gear.
She shook her head before looking straight at Seiki, eyes sparkling with life.
Of course, your case is different, since it's the Shadow Manor themselves who want you dead.
Because of the Ichikea challenge? Seiki sighed as he wondered how many more morgue visits he would have to do before he would even have a fighting chance.
Yes, but I wouldn't worry too much about it,
the Obake said.
It's also part of their code that if you kill one of them, they kill you once, leave a message to get you sweating for a while, then they eventually kill you again, then it's considered settled.
There was a kind of unspoken understanding between these people which he had somehow become part of. I see, Seiki said, mulling it over. But I guess the whole thing is that you will never know when they're going to come after you.
Exactly,
said Kiku cheerily.
Which brings me to my point and our destination.
They had walked down the street and turned left into a smaller lane not far from the bureau. There was a large wooden door in the white wall, and Kiku pushed it open, revealing a garden with low pine trees and trimmed bushes. A pebble path, lit by dim stone ground lamps, led from the door, around an artistic rock formation, up to a bridge across a little stream, and further to a door of a two-storied mansion. Seiki glanced around in awe as she guided him through the garden, and he completely forgot to ask what her point was. Kiku ran up to the entrance and knocked impatiently. The door immediately opened as if someone had been waiting. Behind it was Ikumi of the Shinchioka Scientific Society, level 20.
What are you knocking for? You're already in.
She was a slim girl, slightly older than Kiku, who was dressed in pale green. She looked up at Seiki and gave him a brief smile.
Good evening, Seiki-san. We were expecting you.
Oh, right,
whispered Kiku to Seiki as they stepped through the doorway.
Be in character here, all right?
You have entered the Taira Mansion private territory. Custom combat rules apply. PvP status enabled. The interior, made entirely of luxurious wood, appeared to be partitioned off into the left and right wings, separated by painted sliding panels. The stairway was in the hall in the middle of the mansion, and Ikumi hurriedly led them up, with Kiku asking her about some crafted fan and ink requirements that seemed to be part of their previous conversation. The second floor was also separated into the left and right wing, and Ikumi took them to the right. The painted panels depicted the city, which looked remarkably like Shinchioka, with mountain ranges in the distance. She slid the panels open, and Seiki discovered that it was a large tatami room, with windows along the wall, brightly lit with patterned paper lamps. Sitting on the floor were four people. Mimura of Ichikea, level 22, the mysterious man from the second floor of Ichikea Inn. He wore the same white kimono as the last time Seiki had met him. Sayahime of the White Crane Order, level 27, in scarlet red, was a woman with a face perhaps more handsome than pretty, who Seiki was certain he had seen before. Beside her was her casual-looking clanmate, Hiro of the White Crane Order, level 21, in samurai armor. Further, at the end of the row was a thin, scholarly man, Kazuki of the Shinchioka Scientific Society, level 25. These were his hosts, Seiki observed, not failing to take notice of their levels. Their intense attention on him was making him a little uneasy, as he had no idea what he had done to warrant it. "What's this?" he asked. His best guess was that, since Mimura was present, it had something to do with a delivery he made to Ichikea.
"We meet again."
Sayahime smiled. Seiki remembered her now, from the pine tree in Kakura Village. Ikumi shook her head disapprovingly at the people in the room as she beckoned Seiki to sit down on one of the cushions.
"Don't just stare at him like that. You're making him uncomfortable."
She then sat down beside Kazuki.
Kiku scampered over to her clanmates and plopped herself down beside them.
All right, Seki-san, let's get straight to the point,
she said before announcing enthusiastically.
We're trying to recruit you.
It seemed that they were expecting some kind of reaction out of him, but Seki really did not know what that was supposed to be. Mimura's expression was unreadable. Sayahime was simply watching him calmly. Would you mind getting into the details of that? Seki said. Kiku giggled.
See?
She said, looking at Hiro. Sayahime shot her a stern look.
We, meaning,
said Kiku,
one of these people here.
Seki looked around at them in slight confusion. Some of these people he had never even met. Kiku went on.
Joining a clan will give you protection, among other benefits. At least, people will think twice before killing you, and I can tell you now that the clans represented here are among the most highly regarded clans in the city.
Again, they seemed to be gauging his reaction, and Seki, not knowing what to think, looked at them rather helplessly. I haven't really thought...
We won't rush you, Mimura interrupted him. And of course, he continued, this is a two-way process. So our intention in inviting you here today was to ask for a show of your skills, Seki-san. A friendly duel. I believe Hiro-san has already volunteered.
Definitely not volunteered, said Hiro.
Hiro,
said Sayahime. The man sighed. Hime-sama, can you not have Kiku do it instead?
No,
said Sayahime.
Sword against sword. We have agreed on that.
Hiro scratched his nose. Then perhaps Hime-sama would like to do it herself?
Nonsense,
cried Kiku. Before Seki could ask how they could expect him to fight a level 21, Mimura said,
We have a way to achieve a level of fairness, Seki-san. And no matter the result, you will be compensated for your time.
He paused with a slight smile, possibly for effect, with an offer that you cannot refuse. Mimura clapped his hands together twice and the door slid open, revealing Hatsuo, level 22, in an all-black yukata this time, who brought in a box. Seki stared at him. The last time he had seen that man was in a dark alley with a bunch of robbers. Hatsuo did not meet his eyes and politely set the box down in front of Mimura. Then he left without another word. He looked at Mimura, wondering if he should say something, when Kiku met his eyes and shook her head. Mimura slid the box over to Seki and nodded as if telling him to open it. It was a medium-sized wooden box painted red and black. A quick glance revealed that it was crafted by someone called Isaki. Seki lifted the lid and unconsciously held his breath. Set against the yellow, silken interior was a short, slim blade with a slight blue tint. Its polished black wooden hilt was covered by a layer of fine woven leather straps for grip. Kohagane, plus 32 attack, plus 2% energy regeneration, damage 2.9, speed 1.7, range 0.3. Beside it was a sheath of matted black with a slender streak of dark blue running along one edge. It was a named dagger, and it was beautiful. Seki could only stare at it. Then he looked up at Mimura, completely speechless. This is simply for your time, said Mimura, seemingly pleased that Seki had not even bothered to hide how impressed he was. No conditions. You are not obliged to agree to anything beyond one simple duel. Seki glanced at the dagger again, trying to ignore the fact that everyone was staring at him with the same expression that his coach had when he bought Seki his first flight abroad. It's very generous, he finally managed to say. A more detached part of himself was rather amused, since he knew they could ask him to walk into the Shadow Manor right now and he would be more than willing. He slid the box closed and put it aside.
Hime-sama, it turns out some people have self-restraint,
said Kiku aloud.
You remember what happened when we recruited Hiro?
Hey, that was different, cried Hiro. Sayahime ignored them.
Since Seki-san has agreed,
she said, then she eyed Hiro, who heaved a long sigh as he took off his armor, which consisted of a chest piece, shoulder, and arm guards. Then he stood up and took off his outer layer of clothes. Don't stare now, Kiku, said the man as he added his outer kimono into the pile of armor, leaving only a black yukata with plus 24 defense. The Obake girl stuck her tongue out at him. Mimura turned to Seki with a formal smile. Since Hiro-san is much more experienced, we will give you a handicap. At this time, Kazuki from the Shinchioka Scientific Society took out a cloth bundle from behind him and carefully unwrapped it. In it was a leather piece of armor and a blade and a crude brownish scabbard, both of which he handed to Hiro, who reluctantly accepted them. Seki took a look. Fine leather kote,
minus 1876 attack, plus 778 defense. Warning, durability at 0%.
God, this feels bad, said Hiro as he strapped the leather guard on his left arm.
This is the only way we can ensure that he doesn't kill you with a single touch, explained Mimura. The armor has lost all its durability, so it has lost all its protective benefits as well.
Handicap armor, Seki thought to himself.
For some unknown reason that had nothing to do with fairness, Seki was rather uncomfortable with the idea.
Worst armor in existence?
Ikumi seemed proud of it.
Do you know how many lesser defense enchants it took to achieve this?
Kazuki laughed.
This is actually worth more than a whole set of jade steel armor.
Don't worry, Seki-san, said Mimura. At this point, Hiro-san still has a significant advantage over you.
He was right. The samurai had more than 4,000 HP.
So, here you go, said Kazuki politely,
handing Hiro the short blade from his cloth bundle. The samurai gazed at it as if it was a poisonous snake.
Ushioni no Tsuno. Unique. Plus 64 attack. Plus 1% health restoration. Harness the terrifying power of the cursed ox demon to inflict extra damage to enemies, at the cost of the user's health. Effect. As long as the weapon is equipped, the user's attacks cause double damage to the target at the price of the base damage of each attack on the user, ignoring effects of armor.
Horn of the ox demon, said Ikumi.
This is as fair as we can get it at the moment, said Kazuki apologetically to Seki. At this point, you might be able to handle 3 direct hits, but nothing beyond that.
Hiro sighed as he slid the unique dagger through his obi, then he looked at Seki.
All right, Seki-san. Hikari against Hikari?
Chapter 15. Even when Seki knew there was no real stake in this duel, for many reasons, to him, this was the most important fight he had been in so far. For the first time since he had entered this world, he experienced the same jitters he used to feel before a real match. He closed his eyes and took a deep breath to calm himself, imagining the warm air reaching every part of his body. When he opened them again, his nerves were steel and his full focus was on his opponent. Hiro had switched out his longer sword for his Hikari. Upon inspection, Seki could see that, since it scaled, the sword had much higher attack than his own. With this strange calibration, Seki was not sure how it would actually work out, but Kazuki and Izumi from the Scientific Society seemed confident. Their audience of 4 had moved to one side, giving them a wide open space in the middle.
Hiro, remember, he's only got his parry, so you can't use any higher abilities,
said Kiku.
So no brace, no shout, no self-heal, or anything of that sort.
Hiro groaned.
I know.
He was a young man with a strong build, short-haired and thick-browed, with a glint in his eyes that was half playful and half self-assured. He unsheathed his Hikari and swung it around a few times to readjust to its weight.
Ready when you're ready, Seki-san, he said.
Don't disappoint me, Hiro, said Sayahime.
You know I earn my keep, dear Hime-sama.
Hiro of the White Crane Order, level 21, HP 4081 of 4081, energy 2168 of 2168. Hiro rushed forward with sweeping blade, which Seki recognized as his own habit, since its starting stance was natural to flow into. Seki already had both hands on his sword in anticipation, and he stepped aside and parried the blade upward before kicking out at Hiro's right thigh. The man's reaction was quick, and he leapt out of range.
Whoa! He smirked. Did you learn that from Shosei?
Seki supposed he did. Hiro struck out with another sweeping blade as soon as he landed. Hiro of the White Crane Order. Level 21, HP 4081 of 4081, energy 1192 of 2168. Seki fended off the attack again with a parry before following up with Focus Strike, which Hiro parried in turn. His encounter with Shosei hardly counted as a fight. In a lot of ways, this was his first real sword match. Seki knew energy was everything and it was a limited resource, so he could not be wasting his energy on attacks that could be blocked. Either he had to force Hiro to use up all his energy, or he had to get in close beyond parry range. Thinking fast, Seki closed in and struck out with sweeping blade without using energy. As Hiro drew his sword to parry again, Seki turned his hips to transition into a focus strike, which pierced the man below the groin. Hiro of the White Crane Order, level 21, HP 3093 of 4081, energy 1192 of 2168. Hiro looked down at his bleeding leg in surprise.
Not bad, Seki-san.
He smiled, seemingly excited.
Seems like we can have some real fun now.
He charged forward, and Seki only understood then that the man had been holding back as he gauged Seki's ability. Seki readied his sword in a defensive stance as Hiro closed in with another energyless sweeping blade, which Seki also parried without energy. As soon as the blades met, Hiro's sword shot up, following the motion of Seki's block, and merged into a quick upward slash that forced Seki back a step. Seki pulled his Akari back into the focused strike stance when suddenly Hiro slashed down diagonally with both hands.
"Hey, no kill slash!"
Kiku cried. Seki did not have time to use his focused strike. He was forced to parry the falling blade when he realized that Hiro's attack was a normal move.
"No energy!" shouted Hiro. "Doesn't count."
The blades connected again, and what was at first Hiro's energyless move quickly turned into a down parry. Hikari felt heavy in Seki's hand as he focused his strength against the downward push, which forced his blade toward the floor. The tip of his sword cut through the tatami, as Seki twisted his wrist to disengage his sword and Hiro quickly let go. In a split second, as if he had planned it all, Hiro had already stepped his right foot forward and slashed out again with a full sweeping blade. Seki figured that Hiro had been using the same strategy to waste his energy. Right now, in this tight spot, was Seki's only chance. He ducked low and lunged with focus strike, which caught Hiro on the side. At the same time, he could feel the sweeping blade passing dangerously close over his head. Hiro followed through his spinning motion with a kick from his left leg, which Seki blocked with his arm. But without being in a steady stance, the impact knocked him off his balance. Seki rolled with it as Hiro's blade stabbed down at him. Seki fended off the attack with only his right hand on the sword. He was now out of energy, but luckily Hiro was too, and the weapons clashed harmlessly. Pushing himself up with his left hand, Seki swung his right leg forward to trip Hiro, and the man jumped back. His sword was already slashing down again, which Seki rolled away from. But not entirely in time. He could feel a shallow, icy cut across his shoulder. Seki picked himself up as quickly as he could. It was not a significant injury, and the kick and the damage combined only took about a quarter of his health. Both of them were breathing heavily from the unexpectedly long exchange as they regained their stances. Hiro of the White Crane Order, level 21, HP 2679 of 4081, energy 374 of 2168. The unique blade Horn of the Ox Demon had a tiny health restoration perk on it, and Seki knew that with the meager percentage that his attacks could do, every second mattered. All he could do was to chip away at the samurai's health. Without waiting for his energy to recharge, Seki rushed forward in a focused strike without energy, which he merged into a normal sweeping blade at the last second. Hiro would not be fooled. He was aware that Seki was out, and he did not waste any energy to parry. Instead, he simply knocked the blade upward. Sweeping blade left the user in an open stance, though, and Hiro took advantage of this. Right after the blades met, he immediately stepped forward, and Seki had to twist his body to avoid getting trapped in an awkward position. Hiro's sword arm continued in a circular momentum and curved back into a horizontal attack at Seki's torso. With a violent flick of the wrist, Seki pulled back his sword, which managed a shallow cut on Hiro's leg, just as he threw himself to the floor and rolled away. Hiro of the White Crane Order, level 21, HP 2641 of 4081, energy 412 of 2168. This would never work with this amount of health difference, Seki reflected. Hiro was close to be able to use a special move, and Seki himself was ready for a focus strike or a few parries. Not waiting for Seki to fully recover from his roll, Hiro closed in again with an upward slash. Seki blocked without energy. Before the blades connected, Hiro changed the trajectory into a downward cut, and Seki leapt aside in time to avoid a direct cut. The blade dragged through his skin in a long, frozen gash, stealing another fifth of his health. Hiro followed up with an immediate diagonal upslash, and Seki was forced to parry, which in turn forced Hiro to use energy. Hiro of the White Crane Order, level 21. HP 2217 of 4081. Energy 331 of 2168. As they exchanged a few more moves without any damage or energy spent, Seki grasped something important about the encounter. Hiro was actually fighting at a severe disadvantage. Panting heavily, with streaks of numbness on his shoulder and leg, Seki knew what he had to do to win this fight. Hiro was bleeding from his wounds and was taking a moment's break, perhaps to wait for his energy to recharge. They eyed each other warily. Seki took a deep breath and paused. Right before Hiro's energy had restored enough for a single focus strike, he dashed in again with an energyless sweeping blade. He used it early before he was too close, hoping that Hiro would step back to avoid it rather than try to parry. It was as he had hoped. Moving back, Hiro was just out of range of his offense. The sweeping blade stance left Seiki wide open on the left, and Hiro did not let the opportunity go to waste. He immediately stepped forward and lunged with focused strike. Seiki had been watching out for this. He winced as he forced himself to wait until it was almost too late to get out of the way. Hiro was faster than he thought. Although the ice-cold blade did not manage to pierce, it left a rather deep cut on Seiki's flank, sending numbness through his whole abdomen and dropping his health to a third. Seiki's left palm shot out at Hiro's wrist and knocked the sword away before it could cut any further. Hiro's right foot slid forward and tripped Seiki, who staggered but immediately regained his balance as he leapt up to reposition himself. Hiro of the White Crane Order, level 21, HP 962 of 4081, energy 11 of 2168. Pressing forward, Hiro followed with an energyless slash, and Seiki winced again as he chose not to parry but stepped back and let the blade graze him on his triceps. His health was at a worrying level now, yet this was the only way this fight could be won. In this strange setup for this particular match, the samurai's attack power had been weakened to the point that his offensive moves would not kill Seiki. However, Seiki's own moves were also too weak to make a dent in his opponent's health. The only thing that could significantly drop Hiro's health was his own successful attacks on Seiki. The attack had to connect for the unique blade's effect to kick in, which was a flat reduction of health equivalent to the move's base damage. And the best strategy for Seiki was to take it in grazes and glancing blows rather than direct hits. It went against Seiki's every instinct as a fighter, and it was a gamble at this point. Hiro was still out of energy for offensive moves and rushed in with another downward slashing attack. Seiki ignored whether he could manage to partially avoid this one. Out of instinct, he parried, which again forced Hiro to use his energy to match it. Hiro struck out with another energyless sweeping blade, and Seiki leapt back, preparing to take another graze as he was now familiar with its range. Faster than an Amur tiger, Hiro switched his stance into focused strike. Seiki was raising his sword to counter it when Hiro's left hand drew the unique blade from its scabbard on his waist and threw it forward with alarming precision and speed. The curved horn of the ox demon, black and crude, slashed Seiki on the wrist, and immediately his whole hand went completely numb as if it had been plunged into a bucket of ice. With a gasp, he dropped Hikari just as he heard Kiku cry, "That's not legal! You said nothing about free slots!" Hiro was already in with another attack, slashing his blade upward. Seiki threw himself full force on the man and they both crashed to the floor. Seiki's left hand found the man's sword arm and desperately pinned it down, grunting as his vision was starting to blur from his dangerously low health level. Right now, he had to trigger his strength of will as fast as possible to regain mental focus. They were in an awkward position on the floor, and Hiro tried to thump him with his left hand as he attempted to free himself. Seiki's right arm had regained some feeling, and he blocked the blow. Sayahime cried, "That's enough!" At the sound of her voice, Hiro ceased his struggling and let his half-raised Hikari drop onto the tatami in a soft thud. The abrupt end and the immediate silence that followed were rather shocking, and it took some mental effort before Seiki could let go of the man. His heart was still pounding, and he just took notice that his clothes were drenched with blood.
"What the heck, Hiro?"
cried Kiku. Hiro pushed himself up from the floor, still panting. He smiled weakly at her, but said nothing.
"It's all right."
Sayahime's voice was calm.
"I told Hiro to disarm him when it's almost over."
Seiki was still recovering from the adrenaline rush, and perhaps from the sight of so much blood, which was just starting to register. He dazedly looked up at his audience. "Oh, I see," Mimura could be heard saying. Hiro had started undoing the straps of the leather kote on his arm as soon as he had caught his breath. He let out a sigh of relief once it was off him. Then he turned to meet Seiki's eyes. "Damn, Seiki-san." His eyebrows were raised. "I see what Fuyu means now." Seiki's wounds were already closing when a warm, powerful heal was laid on him and instantly filled his health. He looked over and saw Ikumi with her right hand up. "Thank you, Ikumi-san," Hiro called out as the Hoshi's heal reached him, too. It took another wave of heal from her to restore all his HP. The traces of blood faded quickly after the spell, and it soon seemed as if nothing had happened at all. Seiki was still a little too shaken for speech and gave Ikumi a polite nod of appreciation, which he returned with a brief smile.
"I was curious," Sayahime was explaining to Mimura. "You saw the fight at Ichikea. I didn't, so I wanted to see how he managed to fight Taka without a weapon."
Kazuki was carefully picking up the unique blade from the floor and asking for its scabbard back from Hiro, who also tossed him the leather kote as if eager to be rid of the crippling sleeve. Ikumi quickly wrapped him up in the cloth bundle.
I told you he would figure it out sooner or later,
she muttered to her clanmate. Siki understood now that the match was in no way a fair one, despite them leading him to believe it at first. But he was not sure anymore in whose favor the scale was tipped. The only thing he could be certain of was that the unique blade and enchantments were definitely not meant to be used that way. Kiddo quickly recovered, as he had presumably done this many times, and now that it was over, he seemed in a good mood. He casually grabbed his ikari from the floor and went back to his seat before proceeding to put on his armor. Kazuki was putting the cloth bundle into a larger box. He smiled when he caught Seiki watching him.
Sorry, Seiki-san. That was the best we could do.
Real gimmicky,
said Ikumi, seemingly to no one in particular.
Well, all we wanted was to make sure that it lasted more than a few seconds,
said Kiku.
Right?
Seiki was still replaying the fight in his mind.
Hiro-san,
he asked, looking across the room at the samurai who was strapping on his last piece of armor. This was the first time he had spoken since the end of the fight, and they all stopped their conversations and looked at him.
If you don't mind, said Seiki, what were your instructions?
This took them all by surprise, and glances passed between them. Kazuki hid a smile.
Now that's the right question to ask.
Hiro glimpsed at Sayahime as if asking for permission, to which she gave a nod. And all eyes turned to him in anticipation. Kiku looked around in puzzlement, and the two society members perked up with interest. Even Mimura bit his lower lip. It was clear now that only Sayahime was in the know. Hiro took a deep breath.
Make it close, he replied breathily.
He was now staring at Seiki with a sense of wonderment. Seiki thought about it.
That made it impossible for you, he said.
The only way Hiro could have won the fight was to finish it off as quickly as possible, with full connects, which Seiki was quite certain by now that he could have done if that had been his intention.
Not entirely impossible, said Hiro at this unexpected conversation, as he thought about it too. After that free focus strike, I knew you had it figured out and I was aiming for a kill, but somehow you were really good at...
He searched for a different word, but then gave up.
Not dying. Is that what Fuyu-san said?
Hiro laughed.
Yeah?
Seiki wondered if Hiro had been unconsciously holding back even then, since he had also been told to use disarm. The result of the match hardly mattered, and these people's main purpose was not to test his skills as a swordsman, but perhaps how he handled the whole situation. The samurai seemed extremely pleased.
Hey, better catch up quickly, Seiki-san, said Hiro, so we can have a proper match.
He must have meant leveling. Hiro had been limited to only his first three moves, and Seiki was quite sure it had greatly restricted what he could do. He nodded. There was something beautiful and natural about how Hiro flew into different moves, as well as his energy use, which seemed completely in control. Kiku giggled.
Excited for a new playmate, Hiro?
As it stands right now, Hiro is the better swordsman, said Mimura. But you, Seiki-san.
He shook his head in amusement.
I don't know where you learned all that from, but your style...
It's very unorthodox,
said Sayahime in an unreadable tone. She was studying him closely.
A quick thinker, too, said Kazuki.
Thoughts seemed to be churning in his head. Kiku turned to him, her eyes wide. She cried,
Kazuki-san, don't tell me that now the society wants him, too.
Well,
Kazuki shrugged casually.
That will be up to Seiki-san, will it not?
Mimura signaled him.
Seiki-san, perhaps that blade I have given you was too light of a gift. But as we said before, there is no obligation for you to join any of us.
Oh, we'll convince you,
said Kiku confidently.
Do you want to make a bet on that, Kiku-san?
Said Mimura, slight enmity, uncertain whether real or fake, creeping into his tone.
But perhaps I should ask Sayahime-sama.
He turned to her.
Fang of the Blood Moon for your Rod of Burning Clouds.
Kazuki whistled.
Are you crazy?
Cried Kiku.
Manners, Kiku,
said Sayahime calmly. Then she turned to Mimura and smiled.
The order accepts the wager. What?
Kiku squealed.
Wait,
cried Seiki. Despite not entirely understanding what it was, he could guess by now that they were talking about unique blades, where the outcome of the wager rested solely on his decision to join a clan, the importance of which seemed entirely overblown.
I'm really grateful for the invitation, but I really haven't thought about it.
Look at how these people can bluff,
said Ikumi, apparently to herself. Mimura rubbed his hands together.
Of course, Seiki-san. Perhaps we should start with explaining the finer points of what we do.
Please,
said Seiki.
Like, maybe you could tell me what was in the box that I delivered.
Kazuki whistled again, and Sayahime chuckled. Suddenly, Akumi cursed very softly. Kazuki looked at his clanmate. Noticing her expression, he quickly muttered,
"List!"
Then he frowned as he focused his attention inward.
"List!"
cried Kiku. Then she too cursed. Hiro leapt to his feet. He grabbed Seki Sakari from the floor and threw it at him.
"You'll probably need this now."
His tone, unlike the society in Kiku, was more excited than worried. "And this," he said as he grabbed the named dagger from its box, sheathed it, and threw it towards Seki.
"Use it once before they kill you."
Seki caught the blades, and not completely understanding what counted as using it, equipped it instead of his spirit dagger. After that, he randomly thought about a list of some sort, and information flooded through his brain. Taira Mansion, property of the Shinchioka Scientific Society, territory player list. Host, Kazuki of the Shinchioka Scientific Society, level 25. Host, Ikumi of the Shinchioka Scientific Society, level 20. Guest, Mimura of Ichikea, level 22. Guest, Sayahime of the White Crane Order, level 27. Guest, Hiro of the White Crane Order, level 21. Guest, Kiku of the White Crane Order, level 21. Guest, Hatsuo, level 22. Guest, Toshi of the West Defenders, level 23. Guest, Haru of the West Defenders, level 13. Guest, Michio of the West Defenders, level 17.
"Whose invite was that?"
cried Ikumi. They scrambled to the window at the end of the room and lifted the bamboo shutters. More names were still coming through. Guest, Makoto of the West Defenders, level 19. Guest, Yoshiaki of the West Defenders, level 14. Seki followed them to the window, which looked out over the front garden. There were dark shadows moving through the trees, and the first of the lot were already coming across the little bridge.
"Kazuki!"
a man's voice shouted. Guest, Nobuki of the West Defenders, level 25. Guest, Umiko of the West Defenders, level 19. Guest, Aki of the West Defenders, level 24.
"Territory raid!"
cried Kiku, partly to Seki. Guest, Muji of the West Defenders, level 18. Guest, Yohitsune of the West Defenders, level 24. They had all moved away from the window and stood their ground around the door. Sayahime had put on a golden arm guard with plus 89 defense on it. Her long sword, called Mizuyori, gleaming light blue in the dim light, was already drawn. Kiku stood there with a serious expression, and Hiro's eyes were glittering with joy. Mimura, with a katana that Seki had no time to inspect, stood calmly in a defensive stance. The air was tense with silent anticipation. Ikumi had retreated into the back of the room, and Kazuki had mysteriously disappeared. Footsteps could be heard running up the stairs, and a voice cried, "Not here!" from the other side of the hallway.
"Kazuki!"
someone cried again. The footsteps had stopped in front of the room they were in. Presumably, the attackers had already searched through the rest of the house and found nobody.
"West Defenders? They don't have the Ambition Blade, do they?"
asked Kiku. "No," said Mimura. "They lost it to the Red Dawn 2 weeks ago."
"I can confirm,"
said Ikumi from the back of the room. The atmosphere outside of the room was tense as more and more footsteps joined them.
"Kazuki!"
cried the man again, presumably the leader of the raid.
"Ikumi! I know you're in there, and I know you know what we're here for."
"What are they here for?"
whispered Kiku.
"The horn,"
said Ikumi. Hiro scoffed.
"Come in and get it," he shouted. "Whoever is in there that is not the society, you can leave," cried the voice. "Sayahime, Hiro?"
"That's Hime-sama for you,"
Kiku shrieked. There was a moment of silence. From behind the screen panel, someone cursed.
"Our peers,"
said a woman's voice. Another voice replied in a slightly hushed tone.
"Yeah, it's the order. They're gonna fight."
Seki had his sword ready in hand, but Ikumi moved beside him and whispered,
"Not your fight, Seki-san. No need for you to die here."
"At least I can try,"
said Seki. The panels fell over as the attackers kicked them down, three of them at once in various gear. They quickly ducked, revealing a second row of ryōishi with their bows fully nocked and drawn. A rain of arrows shot into the room with multiple rapid shots, and Seki caught a glimpse of what an army of ryōishi could do. Sayahime glided forward. She slashed her blade up, striking most of the arrows out of the air in a manner that Seki had not expected to be possible. Then all hell broke loose. The attackers rushed in with drawn swords and battle shouts, and Hiro leapt forward into a full sweeping blade.
Nomura parried one of the swordsmen, and someone cried out as they were struck in the back by Kazuki, who had reappeared out of shimmery air.
"Why don't you just give it to people who are actually pushing real content?"
cried Nobuki of the West Defenders, level 25, as Sayahime parried his attack. Then he shouted, "Get the box!" Seki noticed now a large chest in the corner of the room, and Muji of the West Defenders, level 18, scurried over to it.
"Bloodlocked!" he cried as he checked it.
Kiku went after him with a cloud of darkness shooting from her hand. Seki was about to join the fight when Ikumi's left hand grabbed his arm. Her right hand was raised as she sent out white, sparkly heels toward the fray.
"We might not be able to hold," she said.
Then, with her eyes still on the fight, she thrust the cloth bundle containing the two special items into Seki's hand.
"Do you have the room at Central Crossing?"
asked Ikumi. Seki was not sure if he remembered the name of the place. An arrow whisked by and he ducked before it could hit him. It struck the window pane behind him. Ikumi squatted down and pulled Seki down with her. She waved her hand to use some other ability Seki did not recognize.
"Across the pawn shop," said the Hoshi.
"Yes."
Umiko of the West Defenders, level 19, in Shinchioka armor, had spotted them and ran in with what looked like focus strike. Seki stood up and parried it, which immediately drained all his energy. Ikumi shot a hinder at her, slowing her movement, and Kazuki, now on her, forced her to focus on him.
"All right, open and read."
Ikumi's attention was still on the fight as she thrust a paper scroll into Seki's hand. Hiro was taking heavy damage from two level 24s that were targeting him. Kiku was now in a wavery form of herself, and spinning blades were flying around the room tossed by Kazuki. Ikumi's voice was still businesslike.
"Code phrase is Soul Ward is underestimated. Now don't give it to anyone else."
Seki had not seen the Hoshi take damage, but her health was somehow dropping in bouts.
"Read,"
she said as she waved her hand again, using the last of her energy. Some of the attackers were dead on the floor around Sayahime. Mimura seemed to be barely clinging on to life. Seki pulled the scroll open and found only one character on it.
"Go," he said, puzzled.
"You are no longer in a group with Kiku and Ikumi." Around, the world blurred, and Seki's first thought was that an earthquake had struck. He felt as if he was falling, and he grabbed the floor to steady himself as he let out a surprised cry. Then everyone disappeared. Or rather, Seki quickly perceived he was in an entirely different place. It took him a moment to recognize his room at Central Crossing, Trade Street, which he had only been in once earlier that night. Confused, he glanced around and found the cloth bundle in his lap. He opened it and saw both the handicapped Kote and the Horn of the Ox Demon wrapped up neatly in the middle.
"Teleport,"
he said under his breath, in both wonder and slight disappointment. He was certain he would have died very quickly, since most, if not all, of the attackers were within range of one-shotting him. But the glimpses he got of what these people were capable of had whetted his appetite for more, and he felt restless. Someone was yelling his name from outside, and it sounded exactly like Ikumi. He poked his head through the window and saw that it was indeed her in a red kimono.
"Meet me at the stairs," she shouted.
Seki hurried out of his room and found her waiting at the bottom of the stairs in the non-instanced area. That was when it hit him. Although the woman looked exactly like Ikumi, she was not her, but rather Izumi, level 22. Seki stared at her in puzzlement.
"Ikumi?" he asked. "Ask me for the code phrase," said Izumi.
Seki blinked.
What's the code phrase?"
"Soul Ward is underestimated," said Izumi. "Now invite, please."
Seki invited her into his territory, and she walked up one step of the stairs and held out her hand. Understanding what she meant, Seki gave her the cloth bundle and she opened to check it before giving him a smile.
"Thanks, Seki-san. Goodbye."
"Wait," cried Seki. "Are you Ikumi?"
This was not making any sense.
"There are seven of us. Septuplets, can you believe that?"
Seki was not having any more of the mysteries.
"But are you actually Ikumi?"
he asked again. Izumi gave him a playful nudge.
"Oh, Seki-san,"
she said. Then she waved goodbye and disappeared as she left the group. Seki gaped at the empty space where she had been for a moment, before sighing and sitting down on the stairs. From this particular position, he could people-watch as residents came in and out of this busy territory. Although he was completely exhausted from everything that had happened, there were simply so many things he felt he needed to do right now, and it made him feel terribly anxious. Now that the unique blade was safe, he thought he should try to find his way back to Taira Mansion. The only problem? He had no idea where that was. He supposed he could try to locate the morgue first and find his way back from there, and once again he wondered why he had never got around to buying a map.
"Seki-san!"
Someone was yelling his name again. Seki stepped off the stairs into the public area. A woman in pale yellow came running through the door, Irumi of the Crafters Guild, level 22, in pale yellow, who unsurprisingly looked exactly like her other two clones.
"What's this now?"
he said, more exasperatedly than he had expected. Irumi smiled briefly and said,
"Seki-san, Ikumi told me to tell you not to come back yet. They will find you again later, but now they have business to tend to. That's all."
"Did they..." Before Seki could finish his question, she had already disappeared up the stairs into her own instance. Seki swore loudly, causing Yumiko, level 17, who was just coming down the stairs, to jump in alarm. Seki was not quite sure why. Of all the unexpected events that had occurred so far tonight, the teleport was the one thing that left him rather upset. He took a deep breath to calm himself and decided that he needed to walk off his restless energy. He felt a sudden urge to talk to Master Tsujihara, and he started to wander aimlessly in the general direction toward South City. Before long, he found himself walking down Market Street, where he had started the night. It seemed like a long time ago, yet the stars were still out and the streets as lively as ever. Shinchioka truly never slept. He pushed past a group of people and noticed that it was the Kakigori shop he had been in, with its perpetual crowd. He glanced in and was surprised to see Ipe, Maiden, and Kentaro sitting at a table.
"Seki!"
cried Maiden as she spotted him. As he approached them, he didn't fail to note the tray of charms laid out in front of the table. A quick inspection revealed that they were all made by Kentaro. Most were bag charms of various levels. The Hoshi, Kentaro, now with all his gear and a pale shade of light blue that matched his cape, waved.
"Hello, Seki. Long time no see."
His staff was a bit different and also gave off a soft blue glow.
"You look terrible,"
said Ipe with an amused smile. Seki looked down at his clothes and discovered that, apart from his chest armor, which was still relatively new, everything was torn. There was even a long cut on the side of his yukata where the armor had failed to protect it from Taka's slash.
"With that kind of wear and tear," Ipe mused, "someone finally killed you."
He chuckled.
"Don't tell me it's Shosei."
Seki shook his head.
"Who is Shosei?"
asked Maiden. Ipe raised his brow.
"Weasels?"
Seki grinned.
"No."
"Shadow Manor,"
cried Maiden. Kentaro looked at them in confusion.
"What are you talking about?"
"Here, sit down. Nothing a bowl of sugar can't fix,"
said Maiden.
"I need to go find Master Tsujihara,"
Seki said, and he was surprised to find that it was not true. It was nice seeing familiar faces, and it was nice being around people who did not talk in riddles. That was when Ipe remarked Seki's new dagger.
"Where did you get that?"
he cried. As Seki was about to reply, there was commotion from the streets and a noisy group of people came through. From the corner of his eyes, Seki saw they were the West Defenders, one of whom was shouting,
"Can't have gone very far!"
A few people from their group broke off into different directions. Seki ducked under the table before Makoto of the West Defenders, level 19, and his three clanmates could detect him. Maiden looked up at the newcomers, who had paused briefly in front of the shop, before looking back at Seki, her eyes wide with disbelief.
"Don't tell me these people are after you, too."
"Might be," said Seki, "but I'm not sure."
Since he had learned how to parry, and considering the number of people around, Seki was pretty certain he could get away from the West Defenders if he needed to, but he did not want to be responsible for starting a brawl in the middle of Market Street right now. Ipe tilted his head to the side.
"How did you even have a run-in with a war clan? They're normally out west beyond the gate."
His eyes narrowed.
"You didn't just rob that dagger off them somehow, did you?"
"Of course not," said Seki.
"Joking,"
Ipe said.
"By the way, it's still unclaimed, so you might want to focus strike with it once or something, so that you can throw it off a cliff and still be able to get it back from Lost and Found later."
"This is not the time for that,"
said Maiden. Ipe knitted his brows.
"Of course it's time for this. Just look at the dagger."
Maiden ignored him and turned to Seki.
"Go up the second floor and climb out to the next building,"
she whispered.
"From there, take a right, then eventually a left down one of the lanes to get back to South City."
"This is my charm-selling spot, so come here if you need to find Maiden and me," said Kentaro.
Seki nodded and glanced at the door. Three of the West Defenders had already entered the shop.
"Anyone saw any society members around?"
asked Aki of the West Defenders, level 24, a tall man with a longbow strapped across his back. There were much fewer people above level 20 around, and Seki grasped now that being that high earned him some prestige. Everyone in the shop looked up at him with interest.
All of a sudden, Maiden stood up and pointed toward a table at the door.
Oh, you mean like those people?
She asked brightly. Everyone turned to look, and Seki took this chance to slip away behind the counter which held tubs of never-melting ice. The Kakigori seller, apparently a young girl called Mami, gave him a questioning look, but he broke eye contact and she went back to scooping up ice from the tubs.
Hmm?
Hisako of the Social Guild, level 14, raised her head as everyone turned their attention onto her. Her clanmates, Misaki of the Social Guild, level 11, and Miyuki of the Social Guild, level 12, in matching low-level green and blue kimonos also looked around in slight confusion.
No, said Aki, the Shinchioka Scientific Society.
Oh,
said Maiden. Then she shrugged.
Never heard of them.
Seki quietly kept to the shadows as he walked up the stairs, making way for Tomoka, level 12, who was coming down to see what was happening downstairs. The second floor turned out to be equally packed with people, and Seki walked past the tables toward the window looking over Market Street. He peered out and saw that there were four lower-level West defenders outside talking among themselves. Outside the window was a small ledge he could climb out onto. It would lead him to an open window of the next building. Seki grabbed hold of the windowsill and swung one leg over.
Hey, don't jump! Someone at one of the tables called out jokingly. Life's worth living, man! As if he's gonna die falling from the second floor, said someone else.
You can do three floors with armor,
someone else chimed in. Seki smiled at the comments as he carefully placed one foot onto the ledge, which unhelpfully sloped slightly downward toward the street. As he brought his other leg over, he could hear Aki talking from below.
There's also someone else, a level 8 swordy called Seki. Anyone know him?
One of his clanmates, in the shop and hidden from sight, said,
This is useless, man. He hasn't logged out, so he's got to be here somewhere, said another.
Seki was surprised that the information was public.
Hey, Aki, let's move on. We're sending our lobies to look down south, too.
Kihei of the West Defenders, level 16, emerged from the shop below. Seki held still against the outside of the window.
Wait!
It was Ipe's voice.
I think I know the guy.
Kihei turned around and disappeared again into the shop, and the other West Defenders outside were also moving in to listen.
Did the escort quest with him earlier. Seiji or Seki, right?
Ipe continued. Seki secretly thanked his friends as he sidled along the narrow ledge. There was a short section between the windows where there was no handhold, and Seki breathed a sigh of relief when he finally reached the safety of the next window. This room he climbed into was clean, spacious, and lit by a few lamps in the corners. In the middle of the floor, an old man was bending over a large piece of paper. When he saw Seki, Master Juzuo looked up and wrinkled his brow.
Young man, there's a front door, you know.
Then he frowned at Seki's shoes on his tatami floor.
Sorry, said Seki. Does there happen to be a back door as well?
Master Juzuo blinked. As a matter of fact, there is. That is a question one does not hear every day.
Then he dipped his gigantic brush into his ink bowl and in strong, brief strokes, filled the piece of paper under him with two bold characters. Seki chuckled as he saw that it read Seki. Master Juzuo looked up proudly.
The art of calligraphy, young man. Talk to me if you're interested.
I might be, Master Juzuo, Seki said, but I'm afraid not now.
He crossed the tatami floor in as few steps as he could, apologized to the old man once more, and found the stairway. The first floor turned out to be a shop selling brushes and other calligraphy supplies, and Master Juzuo's niece Otsu behind the counter kindly pointed Seki toward the back door. He turned right on the street as Maiden had instructed and looked for a lane on the left. Around the corner behind him, some of the lower-level West Defenders clan members could be seen walking along in a casual group.
Why are we even doing this? Asked one of them.
They had not been at the territory raid and perhaps had not been given the full information. They had not spotted him, so Seki quickened his pace. Being near to South City, this part was slightly quieter, and there were few people around. Soon, he found a lane with a small bamboo sign pointing towards South City. As Seki turned the corner, in front of him, coming down the lane, were Sachio of the West Defenders, level 10, and Umiko of the West Defenders, level 19, the latter of whom had indeed been in the raid and recognized him on sight. Her eyes widened when they met him. Seki wondered if he would not have to start a brawl after all.
Chapter 16.
You!
Cried Umiko of the West Defenders, level 19.
Siki could not run back, as he knew there were more of her clan members coming down the street. As long as the others had not spotted him, he thought the best strategy was to take his chance with the two in front of him.
"Who are you?"
said Umiko, eyeing him warily, but she made no attempt to reach for her sword. She seemed to be opting for conversation first.